This episode is brought to you by Hill's Pet Nutrition. Every shelter pet deserves a second chance, and you're making it possible for thousands of them every day. Because when you feed your pet Hill's, you help feed a shelter pet, which helps make them healthy, happy, and more adoptable, changing their life forever. So they can change yours. Over 14 million shelter pets fed and adopted. Science did that. Visit hillspet.com/podcast to learn more.
The Athletic.
All right, Reds, Tony Evans here at Walk On, your Liverpool podcast from The Athletic.
Well, that was a week to forget, wasn't it? Defeats by both Atalanta and Crystal Palace. Now Liverpool are staring into the abyss. Can Jurgen Klopp salvage his farewell tour? Well, we'll discuss that and where everything went wrong with James Pearce and Simon Hughes. And as ever, we'll start with those three words. Si, you must have three words for us. Give us some uplifting feelings.
Well, Tony, a week ago, I think I said something along the lines of, who knows, in a week's time, you know, we might not have these concerns anymore, and it's actually got a lot worse, hasn't it? So I apologise for leading listeners up the garden path. But my three words this week are another wasted corner.
Yeah.
Now, that might need some explanation, but some listeners might know exactly what it means.
Yeah. Well, yes, it was a classic fanzine. Continue.
It was a classic fanzine. Liverpool used to have problems with corners, even when they were very successful. And that was behind the title of this fanzine. But at the weekend, particularly against Crystal Palace, it did seem like that their most likely route to goal would have been through a corner. They had quite a few of them, and they created quite a few chances, but they were wasted by lacklustre finishing. So they count as wasted, I would say.
Well, they are. James?
I'm going to try and inject some positivity, because we can't have this being like 45 minutes of abject misery. So I'm going to go for I still believe.
That's, that's a bit of a stretch at this moment, but...
Come on, Tony, believe.
But, we'll see what they're saying over the Walk On Podcast Facebook group. Stanley Tannany and Tansy, never give up. I mean, was that collaborations, you think? Do you think they got together, Stanley and Ian, and said, all right, we need to come up with three words? I reckon they did. I reckon maybe in the pub. And, you know, it's and never give up is actually a good message, if you ask me. Rob Mason, down to fatigue? Question, there is. Darragh Donegan, that's that then. Oh, well. Dara, do you have to, you know, after James attempted to give us up, you know, and Aidan Hanna, a complete collapse. Well, I don't think it's quite complete.
To join our community of listeners on Facebook, just search Walk On Podcast and join the group.
The one thing I will say that I've learned in my numerous years of watching Liverpool and watching football is that you can never completely say something's written off and gone. Whether Manchester City are top of the league and whether they're a juggernaut that are almost unstoppable, it doesn't matter because there is still a title race, isn't there, James?
Yes, there is. I must admit, coming away from Anfield on Sunday, the initial feeling was, well, that's that then. Season over, effectively. But then, to be honest, I managed to talk myself back into it on Sunday night because obviously off the back of Arsenal losing to Villa, and I know City have obviously got that 2-point cushion, but you can't throw the towel in. You can't. It's, you know, City have still got to go to Tottenham, where their record is pretty appalling. Difficult to see them dropping any points in their other remaining games, but if they draw or lose that game, then, you know, there's the opportunity for Liverpool to cash in. Klopp has just got to try and ensure they take care of their business, because the reality is, after the last two performances, well, three really, I think, when you factor in what happened, especially in the second half at Old Trafford, he's got a job on his hands lifting chins off the floor, because there is still a glimmer of hope. But if they feel sorry for themselves and let this become more than just a damaging stumble, then the season will be over very shortly.
I actually thought that, James, you know, feeling sorry for themselves. The way they reacted at the final whistle on Sunday, I didn't like that at all. They looked as if they'd lost the final. Sorry, I remember back in 40 years ago, 1984, in the year that they won three trophies, got beat this time of year at Stoke on the 14th of April. You know, it was right at the time. It was like, oh, we come out, the title's gone. Souness went into the, walking back to the dressing room, punched where he thought was a wall. It turned out to be a glass with wood painted over it, a wood effect painted over it. And he scared the life out of a secretary who was sitting inside there typing and had to write a letter of apology.
Graham Souness apologised.
Yeah, that's twice I know of. But suffice to say, we come away from Stoke that day and we're like, oh, well, what are you going to do? We've lost the league, but, you know, won the League Cup and all that. And as it turns out, other teams make mistakes. You know, again, if you look at like the probably the most glorious year of all in many ways, doing the double in 1986, we went into the last week of the season and Everton were nailed on to win the league. A bizarre series of events meant in that last week we ended up winning. We just couldn't believe it happened. These things could happen. I know City are different, but you just can't give up. You got to win. You got to win. You got to take every point you can.
History always has reference points, particularly a club with the history of Liverpool. But I think the very particular problem that they have at the moment is that I think the manager needs to pick himself up first and foremost, because he was very despondent after the game at the weekend.
Frankly, we need to get rid of that fella.
There's a big difference between sort of the challenge facing Liverpool, say this week against Atalanta when the three goals down, and when they played Barcelona, for example. People say, well, he did it against Barcelona in 2019. I mean, I would argue the difference with that is, you know, they went to the new camp and played really, really well. Really could have won the game and lost 3-0. And, you know, you listen to the account of the players after the game. Klopp was telling everybody, I'm really proud of you. You played really, really well tonight. You know, we've got nothing to fear going into the rest of the season. All very positive messages. The mood was, as you said, Tony, I agree, very different on Sunday. Reminded me a bit of 10 years ago against Chelsea, you know, when it was more dramatic. It was closer towards the end of the season. The manner of that defeat at Anfield, which obviously put a block on them winning the title that year.
Didn't someone slip that day? Brendan Rodgers with his team choice and tactics.
They did. Yeah, I'm still not really over that event, to tell you the truth, Tony. I still can't think about it or watch it or see any pictures of it or read anything about it without just feeling really sad that it ended that way.
Oh, that boy Salah put in a brilliant performance defensively.
He did. It was a crazy day. But we're not here to talk about Chelsea in 2014. We're here to talk about the here and now. And as I said, I think the manager's got to try and find a way to get his head around everything. It seemed to me, listening to him, you know, I watched all the post-match Sky interviews, the post-match press conferences. I looked at him visually and he looked absolutely shattered, really, both emotionally. It seemed that the realisation of they got so close and it played as poorly as they have done in the last two games is very un-Liverpool-like. It's reminded me very much of the 2020-21 season where a couple of bad results and they just can't get out of that rut. That's the one thing that Klopp hasn't been particularly good at Liverpool, I would say. When they got into these mini slumps, he's found it, or slumps, he's found it sometimes quite hard to get out of it because he ultimately needs to be the most positive person there. You know, I've spoken to quite a few managers about this. What happens, you know, after a bad result or a bad set of results? How do you get yourself going again? You know, you've got to go into the training ground on a Monday, because if you don't believe, nobody else is going to believe. So he needs to start believing that Liverpool can turn it around against Atalanta, which I think they can. They've got the players there to do it. They can do it, but they need to believe that it can happen. I mean, Atalanta last night played Verona at home, who are a pretty average Serie A team, 2-0 up and drew 2-2. That should give Liverpool a little bit of confidence.
I think he was quite shocked by that on Sunday in terms of, because he'd been quite bullish on the off the back of Thursday night in terms of, you know, I guarantee you'll see a positive reaction on Sunday. So I think the fact that he didn't get that, I think you only had to look at, his demeanor on the touchline when Eze scored. Then the camera panned onto him and he just said, wow. You know, that wasn't him admiring the quality of the finish. It was, how on earth have we been carved open that easily? And like the collective failings through the team in terms of the lack of pressure on the ball, how easy it was for Palace to, I think, what was it, 21 passes? Like five or six kind of half-hearted attempts to close down and then Eze completely unmarked. And then, of course, you had all the missed chances that followed. So, you know, I think he said, didn't he, I'm going to need some time to process this one. Because I think he thought, well, you know, Thursday was a one-off. And then when you see the performance that was served up against Palace, I think it did genuinely kind of baffle him, really, in terms of just how poor it was.
Hey there. Did you know Kroger always gives you savings and rewards on top of our lower than low prices? And when you download the Kroger app, you'll enjoy over $500 in savings every week with digital coupons. And don't forget fuel points to help you save up to $1 per gallon at the pump. Want to save even more? With a Boost membership, you'll get double fuel points and free delivery. So shop and save big at Kroger today. Kroger, fresh for everyone. Savings may vary by state. Restrictions apply. See site for details.
Have your say and get involved by emailing walk-on@theathletic.com.
For me, there's always been an element with Klopp's teams, say, that they've lived on the edge, even when they're at the best. And, you know, it's the title-winning year. Mentality monsters because he fought the way back. And it seems that when you dance along that edge, you're likely occasionally to get a fall. And good Lord, that was a fall last week.
Well, you can't say that it hasn't been coming because there's been that sort of pattern in the matches over the last 8 weeks, really. You know, Liverpool falling behind, Liverpool coming back. You can look at it two ways, can't you, when you're behind in a game and you can say, well, it shows a lot of resilience, you know, a lot of mental fortitude to come back. But then when you're doing that, it tends to expend a lot of energy as well. You know, you've got to put a lot of effort into a match for a much longer period of time. Sometimes, you know, you look back to the Sheffield United victory, that wasn't secured until really late. So I know they made substitutions in that game and I thought the substitutions were really good in that game. But they had to. It took a full mental focus to get through that game. Now, I'm not saying that any game you can sort of slack off, but there are some games, you know, particularly if you start well, you can ease off for half an hour and just not have to put quite so much into it. Whereas it feels like this season, Liverpool consistently over a long period of time in a lot of games have had to put absolutely everything into. So it's not just 90 minutes, of course, anymore, Tony. It's 98 minutes, 99 minutes. And when you keep doing, when you do this regularly enough, it does eat away at your mobility and your agility. And it just feels to me like it's caught up with everybody a little bit, you know, at this stage of the season. And that has happened before, not just to Liverpool, but other teams as well. And then you also throw in the fact that a lot of these, you know, there's two, three, four of these players who are in this situation for the first time. They should really be propelled by the players who've done it before. But let's not forget there was a big overhaul at Liverpool last summer, and some of those players have done very well for Liverpool this season. But I think there's elements of the game that you can tell that they're in this situation for the first time. And let's not forget, it's not easy trying to fight for a title. It's a nice position to be in, but it's the same level of pressure as, well, it's a similar level of pressure to teams that are fighting relegations, that dealing with it. You have to get used to the mentality of having to play under that pressure. And some of the Liverpool players, I think, have shown over the last couple of weeks that they're not quite ready for that pressure yet, but they might be soon, who knows?
James, you wrote a great piece on Tuesday about the reasons for this. What's your take? What do you think is the main reason?
I think it's a whole host of factors combined. I don't think you can look at it and say it's just this one thing that's gone wrong. I think fatigue is a factor, you know, not across the board, but I think you watch Endo and McAllister in that game on Sunday, and both of them I thought lacked their usual spark and energy and dynamism in there. You know, they Klopp had rotated a fair bit in recent weeks, but they were two of the few outfield players that had started, certainly all three against United, Atalanta and Palace. And I think that showed. It's almost like a bit of a perfect storm in a way, because then you've got other players who have come back from injury and they just clearly lack in rhythm. You'd certainly put Salah in that category. You know, Szoboszlai has been a pale shadow of the player that he was in the first half of the season since he came back from his hamstring issues. Curtis Jones still trying to get up to speed. Of course, we've seen Trent and Jota coming back after long periods out. But you know, I think from speaking to people as well, I think just how emotionally draining the last few months has played a part. Because when was the last time that Liverpool won at a canter and were able to ease off and effectively just enjoy the last 20, 30 minutes of a match with no jeopardy? I think it's probably the 4-1 win at Brentford when they were ahead at half-time, had the points wrapped up by 60, 70 minutes. Because since then, you know, even going back to the mid-February when you had the Luton Town home game, that, you know, they were losing at half-time, it took a proper barnstorming second half display to turn that around. You had the Carabao Cup final going 120 minutes, all the emotion of that. You know, you think of, you know, the games against United. You know, Klopp said that he thought the players had felt that was like a catastrophe. It like properly kind of damaged morale, the fact that they'd failed to win either of those two games and failed to make their dominance count. Even the home game against Brighton was in the balance till the end. Sheffield United at home, it took McAllister's stunner in front of the cop to kill them off. I think in that context, there's only so many times, isn't there, you can go to the well and before, you know, there's some kind of damage done to your prospects. And of course, feeding into that is when you start games as slowly as Liverpool do. You know, we've sat here at times this season and gone, isn't it brilliant the fact that they've got these powers of recovery and this resilience, you know, 27 points from losing positions more than anyone else. But in actual fact, it's not sustainable in terms of winning titles, is it? You know, I can't think of another example of a team that's lived on the edge for so long and ended up winning a title. There has to be more secure foundations, especially when the pressure's really on at a period like this. And of course, in recent weeks, more than ever, the finishing has absolutely deserted them. You know, and again, whether that is part of the pressure of the situation, and, you know, not many of those players, probably Salah aside, those attackers have been in a title race before. Maybe that's part of it, but there's just been an alarming lack of composure. And when you're missing chances like that, it inevitably damages confidence.
Yeah, it's frustrating in a sense. And we've all enjoyed it, the comebacks, the emotion, the craziness. But there is something to be said. I'm sorry, you know, we grew up, obviously you're younger than me, but we grew up watching teams.
Thanks for that clarification, Tony. Thank you.
We grew up watching teams that'd be on, sometimes on cruise control from 20 minutes, yeah, you know, into the game. And that being able to kill a game off early on and go on cruise control is something that is really useful. I mean, City are more capable of that than we are. And, you know, as James said, and you said yourself, it expends so much more emotional energy. And that, as much as physical energy, can be a real destructive thing.
I mean, Liverpool have always, under Klopp, tried to challenge City in a different way, and for most of the period have not been a team that necessarily controlled the play as much. Obviously, the last few years they've become more of a possession-based team. But what I would argue is, you know, reference the title-winning season in 2019-20. I'm trying to think back that season. Somebody might correct me, but you know, there were some late victories, obviously. I mean, the Villa one away.
There was a lot more control in that season, wasn't there? Less chaos, more control.
That season, I just felt like they won a lot of games 2-0 or 3-0. There wasn't as much jeopardy, and it was like this sort of relentless get ahead, control the lead, you win the title. And then when you throw a late victory of that manner in, even though it was quite early on in the season, you know, that did feel like this is going to be Liverpool's season. This season has not been the same as that. It's been very unpredictable. You're not necessarily sure what you're going to get from Liverpool week to week. They might win most weeks, but the manner of those victories have been based around more chaos, much like in the, you know, the sort of the early years of Klopp. And I would compare this season to his first full season, really. I know they've gone much deeper into the title race, but there was a period in that 2016-17 season when they were top of the league, I think certainly November time, I think I might be right, certainly October, November time, and people were talking about the title, but they just didn't have that sort of know-how. And this is a new, a very different team to that, you know, in terms of the personnel. So maybe in a year's time, it might take 2 years. It did take Klopp, you know, three, four years to get that team, that title-winning team. And that's what it takes. You know, people have got to be patient. They have done very well to put themselves in this position this season. But I've got to be honest, I've never been fully convinced that they have the level of control that Man City have had and always seems to have under Guardiola. And to some extent that what Arsenal have, I think their problems are a bit different in that they just don't have that level of quality at each end of the pitch, which will end up paying for them. In terms of Liverpool, it's all the reasons that we just discussed. It's not easy to put your finger on one thing, but I must just touch on what, you know, what James mentioned before about the forwards. I just think when you think back to the teams that Klopp, the previous team that Klopp built, you knew what you were going to get out of Salah. You knew what you were going to get out of Mane. If you put them one-on-one, by and large scored, you knew what you were going to get out of Firmino week after week after week. At the moment, I don't think you can say that about Nunes. I think Diaz works really hard at times, but I'm not always convinced you're going to get the final pass or the final cross or the final shot. And equally, Salah just hasn't been able to pick up his form.
Yeah, yeah.
So, sorry, Tony. Producer Guy has just sent some data here, which I think is pretty telling. So in the last season when they won the league, they conceded the first goal the fewest times in the league that year. It was 8 times. Obviously, you contrast that to this season. It's stark, isn't it, really?
I was looking before as well, actually. There was a run of games that Liverpool had in that season around Christmas time, in all comps this is, where they won 1-0, 4-0, 1-0, 2-0, 1-0, 1-0, 2-0, 2-1. You couldn't get a bigger contrast, could you, to what is it at the minute? No clean sheets in 9.
Well, yeah, James, the forwards. If we were going to put our finger on one thing, for me, it has to be the misses. I mean, 21 shots on Sunday without a goal. I mean, that's just a joke. 28 at Old Trafford, 19 against Atalanta. I mean, that's... You got to put the ball in the net, and some of those chances were sitters. Let's be frank about it.
Yeah, I you know, when you look at the expected goals, it was across those 3 games against United, Atalanta and Palace. Liverpool's XG was like 9.1 and they scored twice. That kind of underlines the quality of the chances that they made an absolute hash of. And yeah, I mean, there's a degree of misfortune, isn't there, with some of the, you know, the blocks and, you know, the Henderson save from Diaz, but you know, a lot of those chances, the goalie should have been taken completely out of the equation. You think of the Nunes one where just having that kind of foresight and calmness to realise that a foot either side of the goalie and it's in. The same with the Jota one when he slammed it against Klein. You know, Salah had one as well, wasn't it? Where it's like, you know, you have to give the defender some credit for making the block, but they just shouldn't have been able to do that.
Oh, they picked the man out, you know.
And that's the frustration, because we know how the way things work. If Liverpool just take 2 of those chances on Sunday, and I'm not suggesting that they really deserve to win that game because you could pick so many holes in the performance, but we would be going, well, that's the mark of potential champions, that playing bang average and still getting the job done. But it's damaged them. I think you only have to look across the whole season. Liverpool's shot conversion rate in the Premier League is 11%. And, you know, I think they talked about this on Monday Night Football, that usually when you, to win a league, a team's usually looking at kind of 16, 17% shot conversion rates. And that, you know, that makes a big difference over the course of an entire season. And when you look at the numbers of Liverpool's attackers, and, you know, you've got to be careful because it's not massively underwhelming in terms of the overall numbers, but it's just in a team that creates so much, we all know that they should have more. You know, I think it's only Jota out the 5 frontline attackers who's actually kind of exceeded their XG. And then when you when you delve a bit deeper into the big chances that Opta define as being like that and how many have been converted, you know, Nunes, his chance, big chance conversion rate is 19%. So, you know, one in five big chances he's sticking away compared to 62% for Jota and 54% for Salah. And that has hurt Liverpool at a crucial point because, you know, I think, you know, there was a time, wasn't there, probably 2 months ago where it felt like things were really clicking for Nunes, but he's regressed to, you know, the erratic striker that we saw at times earlier on in the season and certainly last season. I think he's only got 2 in his last 8 games. One of those was in the rout of Sparta Prague and the other one flew in off his backside, charging down a keeper's clearance against Sheffield United. So, yeah, you can see that he suddenly looks like he's got the weight of the world on his shoulders again.
The 5 attackers were supposed to be what elevated Liverpool above the rivals. Unrivaled firepower. Phrases like that were getting thrown around. And it turns out that not much firepower at the moment. I mean, Si, what can Klopp do to get that back on track?
The thing is, are these players natural goal scorers? I watched a documentary about Sadio Mane a couple of days ago, because that's the sort of thing that I like to do in my spare time. And it was quite interesting. I think the documentary was released just around the pandemic and the start of it, and it didn't quite get the coverage that maybe it should have done. It's definitely worth a watch. But anyway, and I was just watching some of his goals and the variety of his goals and whether he'd, by and large, be one-on-one, you know, bearing down on the goal, the whole stadium looking at him under pressure. You know, he'd back-heel it, chip it, volley it, very calmly place it into the bottom corner. I always remember thinking when he was one-on-one, it's a goal. I didn't have any doubt that he was going to score. I always thought Liverpool are going to either take the lead or go further into the lead in a lot of cases. But with the current bunch that they've got, I just don't believe that. And I think the crowd feel it as well. You know, there's a certain noise that comes from the crowd, particularly at Anfield, when, say, a player has a chance or you can see that chance coming. And I'm not saying it feels nervous inside the stadium, but there just isn't that confidence that if it's Diaz or it's particularly Nunes, that he's going to finish it off. And I think Klopp was pretty right, actually, at the weekend. You know, if Nunes lashed at it, you know, that chance from 2 yards when he could have done a number of things, really, with the ball. He had, you know, sort of, it wasn't like he was under loads of pressure. He did actually have time to think about what he was doing, but he's an instinct player. And I can understand the debate around him a lot. You know, he's one of those players at the moment who seems to be certainly dividing the fan base. You know, you go to war for him and say, well, you know, he's able to run around and create the sort of chaos that defenders can't cope with, creating space for other players. Yeah, I get that. But from a Liverpool player, I just think you want a certain guarantee or certain degree of reassurance that he can finish his dinner. And he's finding that very hard. I don't know how you make a player who is a bit like that a lot more prolific. Now, one bit of hope, I suppose, we've had this discussion many times, but Luis Suarez was a lot like that in his first 12 to 18 months at Liverpool. And you could even say, I don't know, Diego Forlan was a bit like that at Man United and then suddenly became, you know, I would say a world-class striker elsewhere. Both Uruguayan players, of course. I just think he needs to find a way to settle down. It's sometimes too keen to prove himself.
You're listening to Walk On, brought to you by The Athletic.
I think one of the problems is, James, and we were all excited about it. You know, your first choice three, front three. Nunes is in there for the last few weeks. We go, yeah, he has to be in there. And now you look at it and you're thinking, really, would a different trio help?
Yeah, I think Klopp's got some real big decisions, hasn't he? Both away to Atalanta, And then Fulham away on Sunday, because I'd be tempted to persevere with Salah, despite the fact that, to me, I don't know whether he just doesn't 100% trust his body on the back of that hamstring problem, whether he just, I don't know, he just doesn't seem to to be influencing games to the same level. And I think that has an impact on his finishing as well.
Yeah, we've talked about that before, the impact of a hamstring injury, particularly on forwards and forwards with pace. And you can see that there's a nervousness there.
Yeah, and I mean, that's a tricky one, but I'd be tempted to persevere with him. But then can you persevere with both Salah and Nunes at the same time when they're both enduring their own little mini crisis of confidence? I think I'd be tempted. I think you've got to stick Jota back in the starting lineup. I think after two substitute outings, he's had more training under his belt. He is by far and away the most natural finisher in the squad. There's an argument to say you play him through the middle and give Nunes a breather, or you give Diaz a breather and play him off the left. I also think it was thin pickings in terms of positives at the weekend, but I thought Gakpo did well when he came on, and someone who has endured his own tough times this season and been, I know we've talked about him previously in terms of being shifted around and not really having a defined role, and I think that's probably had it's a detrimental impact on him. But I thought at least he looked quite sharp and lively, and that was a lovely pass he played to release Curtis Jones for that glorious opportunity. And the other thing that occurred to me is I'd like to see Jadon Dans back included amongst the subs as almost like your wild card if you need a goal with 10 or 15 to go, because we talk about confidence being in short supply in that team at the minute. Well, anyone who watched Liverpool under-21s demolish Manchester United last Friday night will know that Jadon Dans isn't struggling in the belief stakes. And I know it's a completely different level, but he just didn't look out of place, did he? When he made, what was it, three or four senior appearances earlier on in the season. You know, of course, the cavalry's come back in terms of the injury situation clearing up since then. But again, he's a goal scorer, and he showed that nothing fazes him, and he's fearless. So I'm not suggesting you start Jadon Dans against Atalanta, but I'd certainly want to see him in the squad and potentially being brought on, because he's not hampered by the same kind of issues that I'd say, you know, Salah and Nunes and to a lesser degree, you know, Diaz are at the minute.
So Atalanta, I mean, I definitely agree with James there that, you know, you'd want to see the kids in the squad. But how do you go there and get something? Well, not get something. You need to win by four goals.
Yeah. Well, you need to. You can win 3-0 and, of course, try and go through on penalties. And that is not beyond the realms of possibility. I mean, Liverpool have won there. Of course, they won 5-0 in 2020. I think in some ways that their team over a long period of time, managed by the same manager, Gasperini, have always set up with like a 3-4-1-2, really. His approach has not changed a great deal over a long period of time. So I'd certainly be looking at videos of that last performance in Italy when they won handsomely there, albeit in front of a stadium with no fans. On that occasion, I think Salah started up top with Jota and Mane. Obviously, Mane won't be available for Liverpool, so I would be tempted, as James says, to put Gakpo in. I think I do feel for Gakpo in a lot of ways, because he has been moved around positions on the pitch, which I just don't think is helpful to any player, really. And whether it's his ability in training, which is leading to him not getting selected, that's never really been explained. Obviously, you can understand why. But when he has come onto the pitch, he's either played left, up top, in the middle. I just think it's quite hard, because the specific instructions of a player on the pitch in those positions for Liverpool are quite different, I think. So I would start with that front three. I mean, Liverpool went there. I was just looking at the defence, actually, in the last time they went there, and it was a defence of Trent, Reece Williams, Joe Gomez and Andy Robertson. You know, so it wasn't a full-strength Liverpool team on that occasion either. So I think all these things, they've got to take some confidence. They're a team that I think you can score goals against. But it's confidence. My concern is the confidence in the players and, as I said, in the manager. I think something drastic needs to happen in a short space of time. I think if you were to look at the Palace game and try and find confidence, you'd say, well, we did create a lot of chances. You know, Liverpool should have won that game, really. It wasn't like they totally and utterly collapsed. I suppose I made a bit of a comparison before to the 2020-21 season where they went on a bad run, and it just felt like they were in this rut. It feels like that, but they did create a lot of chances against Palace, and they created a lot of chances against Atalanta. you're just hoping that this might be the game where, you know, rather than some of the shots ending up in the stands, they end up in the back of the net.
Yeah, well, hopefully. And then James Fulham, awkward place to go.
Yeah, yeah, they've given Liverpool three good games already this season. When you think back to the game at Anfield, when it was one of those dramatic late salvage acts from Klopp's side. It was, you know, Endo equalising and then Trent scoring the winner really late on. It took four goals of massive quality to see off Fulham that day. And, you know, even in the Carabao Cup, two-legged semi-final, you know, it was a tough night down at Craven Cottage. I think Liverpool haven't won there in their last three visits. And they're not, you know, sometimes you look at a team in that kind of middle part of the table and think, oh, well, you know, now we're down to the business end of the season. Is it a good time to go there? Have they switched off a bit? But that's not the case, is it? Now, they had a really good win over West Ham last weekend. Fulham, you know, Silva's done a really good job there. They got some dangerous attacking players, and without too much riding on it, they'll be able to play with the kind of freedom that we haven't seen from Liverpool of late. So, yeah, it just feels like the most important thing on Thursday night in Italy is whether it's enough or not, that the performance has to inject some positivity, because you just want to see Liverpool go there and have a proper go. And at least, you know, because Liverpool could play really well over there, score three, still concede one. It's not enough. But do you know what? It was pretty heroic in the circumstances. What they just can't afford to do is just write it off and think, well, you know, it's all about, you know, it's gone. It's all about Fulham on Sunday, because you can't just go to Fulham on the back of another underwhelming night. And to be honest, if I was Klopp as well, before now and Thursday evening, I'd be showing the players some of the Atalanta celebrations at Anfield, because they did act like they'd won the tie. And now you could say, well, maybe they already have, but it is only half time. You know, they were still staff members dancing on the pitch minutes after the final whistle, and the manager, you know, was in front of the away end 10, 15 minutes after the final whistle. The way they bounced through the mix zone afterwards as well, it was like they were already in the semi-finals. So, you know, that should hopefully focus a few minds as well before Thursday night.
I mean, it's a difficult run coming up, isn't it, with away games? I mean, does Everton, well, judging by their performance at Stamford Bridge, getting stuffed 6-0 by Chelsea, maybe that's not that difficult. But, you know, if we had all those chances Chelsea made, we'd probably lose 1-0. No, we wouldn't. But and then West Ham away. I mean, these are four away games. In one sense, though, Si, is that a good thing? Because there won't be the pressure of the crowds at Anfield, which, let's face it, there's been an awful lot of bedwetting going on in the last week.
I'm not sure, really. I mean, did you sense that on Sunday, James? Was the crowds contributing towards Liverpool's anxiety?
I thought it was flat. I thought it was flat against Atalanta. I thought there was a degree of complacency in the stands as much as on the pitch against Atalanta. I think Palace felt a bit different in terms of there were moments that sparked the crowd, and there was a period early in the second half where the atmosphere was decent. But then I think it just felt to me after the Curtis Jones miss, I thought that was from then on in, you know, you could hear the kind of the groans and the howls of discontent and all the rest of it. And I think from then on, it was almost like you could almost sense it around the place that everyone was like, yeah, this isn't happening.
Yeah. I think, I suppose you've got to look at the opposition, haven't you? It's only like Everton. You wouldn't back them to beat anybody at the moment, but I would say of the away games, that's probably, you know, whether it's, you know, Fulham, Everton, West Ham, the Everton one is arguably the most straightforward one for Liverpool in a lot of ways. As James said, Fulham, Craven Cottage, they've had a couple of tough games there over the last few years. And then West Ham, Liverpool have dropped points there, haven't they, in previous seasons as well, successful seasons. So, yeah, there's no let-up, really. They're just going to have to find a way. As you said, if this season peters out to them finishing third, you know, bumbling along, it would be a tremendous disappointment. I think you'd be hard-pressed to say, oh, well, look where we predicted at the start of the season. I think a lot of us at best, you know, I think we were on the start of the first podcast of the season. I think the best prediction was third. Am I right?
Yeah, I think we all thought they'd squeak into the Champions League slot,
which they have done, you know, more or less. But I think sometimes you've also got to assess the season as it goes along and see the opportunity that's there as well. You know, that each season doesn't follow the next season according to what happened the previous season. You know, I think there has been an opportunity for Liverpool to have a go at it this year, with City not being quite at the level they were in years gone by. And, you know, football is unforgiving. You've got to take those opportunities when they're there. So any disappointment would be understandable based on sort of how close they were. They've won one trophy. They've, you know, they were doing well in the FA Cup. I still can't believe they lost that game. Europa League game against Atalanta was an absolute punch in the nether regions, shall we say. And then, you know, to have that followed up by the performance and resulting against Palace, very hard to take, really. So everyone I speak to at the moment just feeling understandably a bit down.
Yeah, and I think everyone, from Klopp to those in the stands, James, need to just, you know, to quote Graham Taylor, rise themselves, look for your win.
Yeah. I think sometimes you do have to just take a step back and appreciate where you come from. Because as Simon said, I'm sure if you'd said to any Liverpool fan back in August that come mid-April you'd have already won a trophy and you'd be 2 points off the top of the Premier League with six games to go, I think most people would have shaken hands on that. I certainly thought probably third or fourth was kind of the height of Liverpool's, you know, realistic ambitions this season after so much upheaval last summer with, you know, having to rebuild an entire department of the team and the exit of your captain and the vice-captain. It just feels that this stumble, and it's a huge ask, obviously, in Italy on Thursday night, but it's not impossible. And then you have to just ensure that you take care of your own business domestically. And yes, they're not in control of their own destiny anymore, but there's still a chance, definitely. You know, Man City's record at Tottenham is appalling in the last, what is it, 5 or 6 years. So, but the bigger question for me at the minute isn't will Arsenal and City drop points? It's more, are Liverpool capable of getting all 18 that are still up for grabs? And the only way they do that is if Klopp is able to trigger the kind of response that he wasn't able to get against Palace last weekend.
Yeah, and definitely. And I think that's what it comes down to in the next few weeks. It's not a case of believing in the sense that we think we can win the league from this position. But what it is knuckling down and winning every game. Do your job. Let the others worry about you. Put pressure on Manchester City. Put pressure on Arsenal. And you never know, because we've seen it before. Miracles do happen, and they frequently happen around Liverpool Football Club. All right, that's it from Walk On, your Liverpool podcast brought to you by The Athletic. Thanks to James and Simon for joining me, and you as well. Liverpool are on the road in need of wins, and we'll be back next week, and we'll be talking about the derby then, hopefully with some more points tucked under the belt, and you never know, someone else might falter.
The Athletic.